Welcome to this week's edition of Brews and Crews. I am your host, Chris Jacobson, and I have a special guest, a Winona guest, here with us today. Merle Hansen is on the podcast today, and he has a whole lot of things he wants to talk about. Merle, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Chris. It's nice to be here.
And you requested the Kite Soda, which I don't even know what this is, but I know it's a THC soda.
A THC soda that chills my bones. And when you get to be 65 years old, your bones need relaxing because they ache, their joints hurt, this hurts and that hurts.
Absolutely.
And so I like this Kite Soda. I think it's a really good product.
And now I've had THC seltzers, but I've never had a THC soda.
Okay.
And when I picked this up, I noticed that there's multiple different there's multiple different flavors. There was orange. You sent me this one on a photo, so I grabbed the ginger ale.
Yep.
Then I picked up one other one for myself, which was a citrus. So yeah, I'm going to try that one myself then.
I find it's, you know, when I come home from work or do writing too many stories and my mind is just all frizzled, I can pop myself one of those and all that tension, just, it's gone for me.
Well, let's crack one of these bad boys open.
Let's crack one of these bad boys up.
Kite Soda.
Kite Soda.
Cheers, Merle.
Cheers, brother.
All right, let's see what this tastes like. Tastes like a ginger beer.
Yep.
Tastes just like a ginger beer. My wife, before she was pregnant, she loved having mules, Moscow mules.
Oh, I love Moscow mules.
And they make it with ginger beer, and they are very, very good, but she can't have that anymore, at least until she gives birth. But this is cool. I've never heard of this, and how did you ever come to know about this?
Well, we went sampling. You know, we went out, and we checked different liquor stores and stuff like that, and we checked 5 milligram and 10 milligram, and they all got different tastes.
Okay.
And so we started drinking this Kite stuff, and we found it was really, really good. And we used to drink the stuff that was sold at Two Phantoms down there.
Yeah.
And that was pretty good. And I don't know where they are now with their business plan and if they're going to start brewing the THC sodas again or not. But
so they have, I know that they have seltzers, I'm pretty sure there. I haven't bought any, but they did have those. You're right, because I grabbed a couple and there was just five milligrams.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, though, you have one. Doesn't taste like it. Just tastes like a regular drink, not alcoholic, nothing like that. And it was relaxing. You go to bed and just go right to sleep. No big deal.
I know a lot of people who take them to go to sleep.
Yeah.
Because it does a trick.
So it has the Delta 9 in it, and it has the Delta 8. And, okay, so this is out of the Twin Cities, it looks like.
Is it?
Yeah. That's what it says. It says, we use only Minnesota grown and processed cannabis to make our refreshing craft sodas. So. Very cool. This is actually a very good drink. I'm interested to try my seltzer one next when I get home sometime. So, yeah, Merle, you contacted me on Facebook. That was awesome. And I love the way you contacted me. If you ever want to interview a slightly sane writer, get a hold of me.
Well, you know, most writers aren't wired like other people.
Okay.
And I wish I could be wired like you. I wish I could be wired like your dad. I wish I could be wired like Bob Kierlin, but my mojo on the inside isn't like that. I mean, sanity left me when I was a young man. I mean, I had a breakdown, what you would call a breakdown.
Okay.
And I'm a paranoid schizophrenic, and somehow I maintain control. Regain control. I've been behind locked doors. I've been put away. I've been put on a 72-hour hold. I've heard voices.
Okay.
I've seen dead people, living dead people.
Holy smokes!
It's so much a part of my life. You know, I mean, I was 19. College student, like it hits so many people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people who get schizophrenia, it's between 18 and 19, early on. You've probably got friends whose lives fell apart between when they were 18 and 19 years old. And I started hearing things. I started feeling things. The hair would raise up on the back of my neck. And I'd be the only person in the room. But something was there. And it took me a long time to put a face to that experience. First dead person I saw, I think, I was living in Spokane, Washington.
Okay.
I was having a really hard time in life. I had left Winona. I said, I got to get away. So I headed out to Spokane, and found a place to stay and work the summer, just trying to get my groove back on. But I needed some weed. I just needed some weed, so I headed out under the bridge in Spokane. And so I'm down there nosing around. I mean, I don't know why I would choose to look under a bridge for weed. I should have gone to the college campus. But I'm down there looking for weed, and this lady comes up to me, and she was all dressed in black. She had this long nose and a wart on a thing, and she pointed her finger at me, and she goes, "The devil's going to get you." Well, I'm an 18-year-old kid, right?
Yeah.
I ran. I mean, I was scared shitless. Not that she was good. I mean, I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
And shortly after that, I came back to town, and my dad and my uncle brought me into the psychiatric unit, brought me to Mayo Clinic, mm-hmm. got an appointment with the psychiatrist, brought me to Mayo Clinic. They talked to me. They admitted me. Dad later told me that it was the hardest thing he had ever had to do, because he tried to get me to help through the courts. And so he had to go through the courts. And,
okay.
And, you know, most schizophrenics don't make it back. Very few of us make it back.
Sure.
We end up dead, or we end up living in an institution, or we end up medicated so we drool and we can't hardly talk. So in that regard, I'm very, very lucky.
Sure. And here you are today.
I mean, where else would you rather be?
Yeah.
Bruise and Cruise?
I know, the Bruise
and
Cruise podcast.
I mean, this is where it's at.
And you have awesome stories from what people have told me.
Well, I hope you start to read them, because young people like my stories as much as old folks.
Really?
But it is. I went to Lewiston High School and spoke to some 7th and 8th graders.
Sure.
Once, and I wrote them the Deer Hunter story, which is in Portrait's book.
Okay.
They were open mouth. I've never heard seventh. You know how hard it is to get 7th and 8th graders to shut up and be quiet and
sometimes
still?
Yeah.
These kids were absolutely still.
Really?
I keep my story short.
Yep.
They're 10 minutes, you know. And for 10 minutes, you're in a different place. So whatever you were worried about, it's like one of these THC sodas.
Yeah.
You're gone, man.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what. We got too much noise in the world, too many distractions.
Well, nowadays our attention span, with everything being so quick and so short, it is tough for some people, myself included too sometimes. But you're right. You just told me that story about going to Spokane, and you had me in for like 2 or 3 minutes right there listening to it, and I didn't speak a word hardly.
Yeah. I mean, Winona.
Yeah.
Winona's stories and the dead people of Winona, the legends of Winona, the myths of Winona.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all over. You go into any local bar in town, you go to the High and Low, or you walk into the old Steve's Lounge, and you walk into anywhere, and they're filled with the old people. They're filled with the old people and their stories. And the guys sitting on the bar stools who had life fall on their heads, they all got stories, and they remember things that happened, where things broke down, and you had to learn to stand up. You know, this town ain't normal. I mean, we're a river town.
Yeah.
You know? And we've always had a blend of different people. We're never straight line thinkers. We all got, and that's why some of our businesses are so successful, because these guys think out of the box.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't care if you run Peerless Chain or Fastall or any RTP, any of the big startup companies, Jacobson Properties. Your dad didn't make his money just following in the step. He had to think.
Yeah, outside the box.
Outside the box. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's all about. And all over this town are people who think outside the box.
What are some good, give me a good story about Winona that you have.
Lena Weinberg.
Who?
Lena Weinberg.
Who's that?
Oh, she was here in 1856.
Okay.
She was 5 foot tall, and she was ugly as sin.
Okay.
She came from Germany, and she ran the brothel that was in the Huff House.
Oh.
Her and Colonel Cockrell and E.D. Williams were the proprietors of the Huff Hotel. And it was the best hotel. It was the nicest hotel. It was freewheeling. I mean, Winona was a rough town. You got to remember, we had dirt roads and pots, and there were pigs coming. The 1,300 steamboats came to the shores of Winona in 1859.
Wow.
They brought cattle. They brought people. They brought animals. They brought foods. They brought... The biggest paddle wheeler, my understanding, was the Minnesota Packet Company, which was founded by Orrin Smith. Orrin Smith was the founder of Winona, and he would bring people up from Dubuque and all points west because we didn't have a way across in this. Whoops.
That's okay.
We didn't have a way across in this river until 1872.
Sure.
When they put a wooden train trestle across the Mississippi River.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time that happened, the old locomotive went over and the trestle collapsed in the river.
Oh, no.
No shit.
Yeah.
Well, pardon my French.
That's okay.
So as a storyteller then, what do I do? I start thinking about, okay, who is losing their interest to the train industry? The ship captains.
Sure.
And the paddle wheelers. So then the boys at the old Kresge Cafe, or one of the cafes that were all over downtown at one time, start talking about the paddle wheelers maybe sabotaging that.
Oh, yeah, a little conspiracy theories.
A little conspiracy.
I like that.
It isn't just our generation that's got them running through us.
Sure.
It's everybody. But Lena Weinberg, she accumulated a lot of money. When she died, they found $26,000 in gold coins. Now, this is 1886. $26,000 was a...
Well, it was a big chunk of change back then.
Yeah. And she had it in false bottoms.
Oh, gotcha.
In her piano stool and in her luggage.
Mm-hmm.
Well, by 1889, because that hotel was built in 1856, but by 1889, it was kind of... You know, motels are good for about 20, 30 years, even today,
mm-hmm.
right? And you got to... It was looking a little shabby. And so the money boys, and they, in the late 1800s, there were a lot of deep pockets.
Okay.
There were a lot of three-piece suits walking around with eating seven-course meals and, you know, pounding cigars and doing the whole bit. And they'd been trying for years to get Colonel Cockrell and Lena to sell.
Sure.
Lena refused. They tried putting her in the asylum in Rochester. They put her in the asylum in Rochester. She wouldn't sell. They were Cockrell's nieces and everybody. John Ludwig was the mayor. He was president of the German bank.
Okay.
Oh, he was crusty. Oh, he was. He'd come. He lived right across the street from St. Martin's.
Really?
But he was Catholic.
Okay.
He lived right across here, and he walked around with a cane. And you read in the old Winona newspaper project about this guy. Well, he'd be regularly getting in fights and taking his cane after people.
Oh,
this was a money bank president. Can you imagine Greg Evans or whoever's Rod Nelson who's ever running that down there now? I mean, it just couldn't happen.
Yeah, times are different back then.
Times are different. Ludwig eventually persuaded Colonel Cockrell to sell. First, he had the Ludwig Motel, which is where Peter's Beer Garden.
Oh, really?
Now.
Okay.
It was a three-story brick building.
Yeah.
And he sold it. Well, Lena owned 10% of it. When Williams died in 1872, and that's a story in it too. Cockrell gave her 10% of the company, and she was pilfering 10%. I mean, you get $26,000, and you're pilfering. You're more than your fair share, and you're selling your. She had the ladies up on third floor of the Huff Hotel.
Okay,
and they were the prettiest. I mean, Winona girls are pretty, right?
Sure, yeah.
I mean, they're you know, you can't beat them, and so Lena did that, but in 1886, she was doing her morning constitution in back of the Huff House,
okay,
or Colonel Cockrell's house, which was on the corner of 4th and Johnson, where the old Winona Opera House was.
Okay, yep.
Okay, that was there. She's doing her morning constitution. And the next thing you know, she comes flying out of that outdoor potty house. What do they call them? Outdoor potty house. Comes flying down to 4th Street, and her skirt's on fire. And right there in the middle of 4th at Johnson, Lena Weinberg took her last breath.
Okay.
And the local folk immediately said, well, she committed suicide. And you could imagine all the preachers and pastors in town
Yeah.
condemning people for the, you know, taking their own lives. But when you look at it a little bit more, because I mean, I'm a writer. I don't trust Buster nothing. I'm a little bit suspicious, you know?
Sure, yeah.
And I start digging. And I noticed that after a couple of days, notice went out that the Winona Republican Herald stopped reporting on what happened to Lena Weinberg.
Okay.
And you got to remember, we were really connected to the New York money interests. That lumber industry brought in a lot of money, as did all the single women of the,
sure,
of the lumber companies, because they were all, they couldn't breed male heirs for whatever reason. They'd have one and they'd die. Laird's lost one. Norton's.
Yeah.
Norton's lost two, their two oldest sons. Henry Huff himself lost Owen and Wilson and I think a daughter. So, you know, death, I mean, kind of hung over this town.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know what it was. Some people talked about it was the Native Americans whose, you know, graves we dug up. And
sure,
they,
sure.
Their spirits rose and they came back to, I mean, nobody knew.
Yeah.
You know, nobody knew. So a lot of the townies would say, well, it's karma. It's just, you know, mm-hmm. At that time there was a real, you know, wage. You know, you either had money or you were poor.
Yeah.
You know, and so that was the basis. It's kind of the basis of the book I'm working on now.
Okay.
We're going to call it Lenaville.
Lenaville.
I think. Names always change by the time I get done. About halfway through the next one. And it'll be about as I walk around town trying to figure out who killed Lena.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And so you talk to, you know, you talk to all sorts of different people.
Yeah. One of my favorite things that I love every fall that Winona does is the cemetery walk.
Yeah.
I love the Voices of the Past thing. And so anytime I go to that, because I like the history of Winona. I don't know what reason I do. So it sounds like you do too. And I don't even know what the reason is. I just love listening about things that happened. I remember one year it was about like businesses. So we learned about Blado's and all that kind of stuff. And they were really neat to listen to.
Jonelle and Jonella, the crew at the Winona History Center, are so good. You know what they did this year? Jonelle and I have been talking for a long time,
yep.
And she does a great job, and but they can't really use my work because I'm a little creative.
Sure.
You know, they want to keep it right, you know, kind of right there, but on the credits for the writings,
yeah,
even though I wrote nothing for them, they put my name on that thing.
Okay.
It made me feel really, you know,
sure.
It made me feel really, our history is important.
I think so.
Building, and we need the old buildings. What your dad did with the saving the Winona Hotel down there?
Yeah, the Kensington now.
Kensington.
Yep,
that was cool.
Yeah,
that would have been an eyesore to put up an aluminum building.
Yeah, like I mean, it's a historical landmark, so you couldn't do much with it. But it was really neat inside for sure.
Oh yeah, yeah, and so I do. You know, and I try when I'm writing and bring Blado's Donuts in and go back to the Gerdes family and the Malky family.
Yep.
And you start doing, you know, like that. You know, it's interesting. Like across the street, you've got the Lighthouse.
Yeah.
And there was a murder there. And
just literally across the street here?
That greenhouse.
The greenhouse, okay.
The greenhouse,
now it's a rental property.
Yeah, it was kind of then, too, because the lights moved out and he had a worker, I forget what her name was, but he turned it over to her.
Okay.
She was like a nurse and took care of all sorts of different things. Turned it over to her, and a priest from the La Crosse Diocese lived in there. And you can imagine a pension from the Catholic Diocese back then.
Sure.
I mean, the boy was scraping bottom, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so she started taking care of him and her jealous husband.
Okay.
And that didn't sit too well. And so one day, night, Sunday after, I don't know, he popped him.
Oh, okay.
I mean, our Winona papers are fantastic because mm-hmm. they wrote everything.
Yep.
You know, and about 6 months later, the guy got off the murder charge
mm-hmm.
and was up north, and he took his own life. But the Winona paper was, and I think they had a little axe to grind. They loved writing anything they could about the grungy East End of Winona.
Sure.
And I mean, because those people were poor.
Yep.
The Polish people who first came to this town, they struggled for, they were hungry, they struggled for everything. And They built those little houses right next to each other. And,
yeah, the shotgun and houses.
Shotgun houses, yep. Yeah. And so it's amazing. And if you were to talk to some people from 100 years ago and they told you Polish people, Peerless Chain and Fastenal and Gostomski's heating and ventilating company,
mm-hmm.
and you look at the amount of Polish people today in Winona who are heads of companies, heads of corporations, it's pretty amazing.
Yep.
I mean, Winona's amazing the way it is. We got Fortune 500 companies
yep,
in this small little company. And most towns would be happy with one. They'd be a one-horse town.
Mm-hmm.
Like Red Wing's kind of a one-horse town with Red Wing Shoe.
Yep.
And they've expanded that a little bit. But up here, how many we got?
Fastenal's a big one.
Yeah.
And then you got Peerless Chain and stuff of that nature.
Yeah, a long, long time. A lot of history. So Lena Weinberg is kind of the topic of my next book.
Okay. So that's the topic. And now I talked to a lady, and she said that you have some good ghost stories from Winona. Is that true?
Well, some people call them ghosts.
Yeah.
I just say I kind of live in the world, and maybe it's my schizophrenia.
Sure.
But I live in the world beyond the seeing.
Okay. You said you see dead people.
I've seen dead people.
Okay.
I told you about the one of the witch.
Okay, yep.
Yep. In 1977, I was locked up on a psychiatric unit.
Okay.
They had me on Thorazine, Stelazine, and Haldol. I mean, these are horse pills, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're made to make you drool.
Okay.
And, you walk like a zombie. It's like a 200-pound weight.
Yeah.
A 200-pound weight around your neck. And I'd been there, that was the first admission. I went there 3 times, 6 weeks, 4 weeks, and 2 weeks. And I told this story, by the way, at the Storytellers Festival.
Okay.
One night in front of a big crowd. And
where's that located at? In Winona?
In Winona, St. Mary's. It's really we just spent an hour, and you got storytellers from all over the world. The best story we got last year and two years ago, we got the world's championship liar.
Really?
Bill Lepp.
Okay.
And I tell you what, he's amazing. And we get these old storytellers, old black storytellers, some of them, and they do get their chanting and their singing. And they take you away. They take you away. It's really a cool thing. But in 77, I was crashing in bed about 7 o'clock at night, and I was out. And usually once they give you those pills, you're dead to the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're gone. So in the middle of the night, I hear this noise at the end of my bed, and I kind of come creeping to, thinking, who's pilfering my pockets? I mean, I'm a schizophrenic. I ain't got no money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm talking quarters in my pocket and 2 single crunched up dollar bills in my wallet. You know what I mean? Stealing what little I got.
Yeah.
So I kind of start coming to, and I start balling up my fist, and down there at the end of bed was just this kind of funny light. He says, when you write, use small words. Write like you're there. And give meaning. And it was gone. So I got up the next morning. And I said, what the hell was that? And heard my dad's roar. My old man was a Marine,
Okay.
And you know how they can be.
Uh-huh.
Charge that hill.
Yep.
I hear him saying, charge that hill. Go up. But that night, I said to myself, well, maybe those voices ain't just up here. Maybe they're real. Maybe they're behind the seeing. So I confronted them, faced up to them. That's when I started getting better.
Okay.
And I had a couple relapses. I didn't like taking those pills.
No, I know. You said it made you feel like a zombie, basically.
A zombie. I didn't like taking those pills. But at that time in my life, I needed those pills. I could see that now.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to get knocked on my butt, which is what they did.
Okay.
And so I'd go off the pills. And then I'd end up right in because my wiring wasn't right. And then went in the last time, got it all taken care of. I mean, I took Rorschachs. I had my head looked at. I had took MMPIs left and right, all the things that happened. You know, when, for me, and I'm sure it's similar to a jail cell, you hear that metal door clanging?
Mm-hmm.
It runs right through you.
Sure.
You say to yourself, I can't get out. You're trapped. And you gotta put it together to talk to doctors into letting you come back out.
Yeah.
You know, because it's, but it helped form. Aren't they good tasting?
I love it. It's really good. It's easy. I'm almost done with the first one. So yeah.
I mean, and then that brought me out. I was going to school out of St. Mary's. And I was out 3 o'clock in the morning once because dead people like talking to me at 2 in the morning.
3 a.m.?
It's quiet.
Yeah. You know? I heard that's when, if you wake up in the middle of the night, there's possibly a dead person that woke you up for a reason.
Well,
between 3 and 4.
Science girl, who I love dearly, she's my partner. She's starting to see him, I think.
Okay.
And she tells her, will you quit inviting him in the house?
You're inviting them. What'd you do, put out the THC
well,
seltzers?
Well, I don't know. They just seem to gravitate towards me, you know. So I'm 3 o'clock in the morning. I find myself on the steps of St. Mary's Hall. And that's when I met Father Lachey. And that's when he would have been my third dead person. And he talked about shooting Bishop Heffron. Boom, boom, boom. And he said, well, that Bishop Heffron, he wouldn't let me go back to France. I wanted to go back to France because my nephew was being ordained as a priest over there. I wanted to go back. And Heffron wouldn't let him go. He wanted his own parish here in Winona County. Heffron wouldn't let him go because he had him teaching reading. He was
sure.
A smart guy. And he finally got frustrated in the dead of winter or whatever. And, you know, winters are hard up here for some people.
Oh, they are. They have been, well, last year wasn't so bad,
no,
but the ones
cold,
before.
But well, they're cloudy.
I know.
And
depressing.
We're so sensitive. Yeah, yeah. We're so sensitive to the sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said that's what caused him to, and he was the last one. I went to visit him at St. Peter State Hospital, probably about 3 years ago. I couldn't get into the cemetery because I was in the spring and all muddy and stuff like that.
Sure.
But
you went and visited him where?
St. Peter State Hospital. That's where.
Oh.
The church wouldn't let him go.
Okay.
They committed him, and the trial took about 30 seconds because Bishop Heffron came to the, you know, and it was done. They sent him to St. Peter State Hospital, and he never left.
Okay.
Until he came back to Winona to talk to me.
Sure.
And but that was the last one. And, you know, I guess the test of a writer isn't so much what I see, that I see dead people, but it's if I'm writing and I get you to see dead people.
Right, yeah.
That's the sign of a good writer.
That is, yeah.
And that's what I hope to attain. That's what I hope to do when I write.
Sure.
And I look at it, not that I'm messing with you, but I'm trying to get you, my reader, into a different place.
Sure.
And most people follow me pretty religiously. They like my stuff.
Yep.
You know, they like what like you.
Yep. I'm listening.
Everybody
I'm intrigued.
Everybody likes what. Well, I got a book for you.
All right. What do you got?
Well, I brought a sample of all my books.
Okay. How many books have you written?
4. I'm about halfway through my 5th.
Okay.
And I'm working on a play.
Oh.
I've never done a play.
Sure. That'd be different, wouldn't it? The
well,
writing
I write
style?
About, well,
is it
I'm
harder?
It's just awkward. It's just, you know, getting my body to see it like that. I'm going to do one on the Morgan Block.
Okay.
Now, that Morgan Block was before your time.
Yeah, and that's where Morgan Schuler's is, right?
No. It is where the strip mall is in downtown Winona.
Okay, gotcha.
That was a one-time three-story brick building all the way around. There was the Simpson Block, and then there was the Morgan Block. And the Morgan Block in its dying days was a little bit rough. You know, it was, the windows weren't the nicest, the bricks had gaps. I mean, it was dying, right?
Okay.
You know, buildings only got so many years if you don't really maintain them.
That's right.
And So I write the story of the people who lived up on the second and third floor, their balconies. And there's names like Stanley Dearman. Most people knew him as Chinky.
Okay.
They're just character composites of a lot of different people.
That were actually from here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Gone, some of them a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so they get telling the story, not me, you know, not me. They tell the story, and they get arguing, and they get, you know, because people had a rough life sometimes when they get arguing, they get
sure.
really arguing. So I'm working on that, and then I'm working on the Leanoville story. But this book, my first book.
Okay.
This one's yours.
This one's mine.
This one's yours. I made it out to Bruising Crew.
Okay.
Bruising Crews.
So for those who are watching or listening, it's called Across the Great Divide by obviously Merle Hanson. And this one is been made out to me specifically. If you're watching, you can see he signed it, put the date on there and everything. Because it is, it's the 11th of November right now when we're recording this to Bruising Crews. And I have a book to read now. So what is this book about then?
Well, if you read that back page, it's about my journey into schizophrenia. And, you know, I used to drink a lot of Jack Daniels.
Okay.
Jack Daniels was my thing.
That was your go-to.
But I drank Jack Daniels, and I'd start feeling things on my insides. It was doing something to me. And then I found weed back in the 70s.
Okay.
Would bring those people to life.
Okay.
So this is the story about me walking around town running into people through a schizophrenic mind.
Okay. Awesome.
It's available all over town, bookstores, retail shops, Hearts Desire, Rusty Bucket, Clara Louise, Historical Society, Paperbacks and Pieces.
Sure.
Chapter 2 books.
So this is everywhere in Winona.
I'm trying to. I mean, some of my books have sold really well. You know, Ageless Winona.
I've seen the Ageless Winona one
that
all
over the place.
That is
still selling. And I've had people who normally don't. You know Rito, Bruce Reed?
I know. Well, yeah, I know from YouTube.
You wouldn't normally call him a reader, right?
I probably wouldn't, no.
He comes up to me. I go, Rito, as I'm driving over there by Market Tap. And he comes running up to my car. And he says, you write like you were there. And you were there because it was just like yesterday.
Yeah.
And you get a compliment from a guy like Rito. And it kind of hits you right here.
Sure.
Because not only intellects like my stuff, but regular folks like my, townies like my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our bond.
Yeah.
That's our stories.
Well, yeah. I mean, you do a great job just telling me stories here in person, which you said you'd done some storytelling at St. Mary's and stuff like that. Now, the question I have is, did you draw this then? Do you draw?
Oh, no.
Someone else did that for you?
No, I can't draw.
Okay.
In fact, I can't write with my pencil. That was done by a remarkable, I don't know if you know Mark Casper.
I think I do.
Mark, for years, worked in Rochester for one of the heating and ventilating or plumbing companies.
Okay.
Just recently retired. And I said, how did you carry around that artwork all these years while doing plumbing? And he said, I don't know. It just started to come out. And so I asked him. I said, hey, Mark, you think you can, you know, because he's shown up at a lot of my readings.
Sure.
You think you can draw something to put on the cover? And sure enough, I got the original up in my house.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, we went back and forth with what should be on it. And I said, well, why don't you paint something with a guy on clouds smoking a J, right?
That's exactly what this is.
and he did it. Yeah. That's his wife, Judy's hand. And
okay.
I think it's my best book.
It's great. Yeah. It looks awesome. I've seen this everywhere.
Yeah.
I know I have around town.
Yeah. And it's, as I read through it for first edition collectors, because we'll probably have a second edition at some point.
Okay.
I found a misspacing in there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I'll tell you how that works. This, Portraits, is my first book.
Okay.
I wrote this, and there's a story in here. It's out of print now, mind you.
Okay.
Out of print now. Two cops came knocking at my door making sure I was okay.
Wow.
Yeah, no shit. They kept knocking my door, and they were good. I said, that's some good piece of writing, because we were, you know, when they started to do Levee Park with Frank Pomeroy and sure. Mark Peterson, and I decided I'd write something about one of my relatives. And he had popped some blue pills down there in the 30s, I think it was the 30s. Never saw tomorrow. So, and so this book, which originally retailed for $13,
mm-hmm.
on Amazon nowadays, $45.
Holy smokes.
I mean, it's just a cheap, I don't know who's paying $45 for this, but there's some good stories. Or they're obsessed or they want a full collection of Hansen.
Okay.
So.
So a full collection would consist of these four books
these four
currently.
Books so far.
And then a fifth one coming.
This was about, a lot about the East End of Winona.
Tales from the River, River Bottoms.
Yeah. It was shorter than I thought it was going to be, but I struggle with Polish names sometimes, especially remembering them.
Just remember, the end ski.
Yeah, exactly. And they come out, I was probably more creative than most with this, but it talks a little bit about the Polish experience. There's some really good stories in here about the Lubinski family.
Okay.
And the owns the Rusty Bucket, and they had an uncle, and he came back from the Korean War, and the story of his time, not only in the war and marching in Korea.
Sure.
He was a POW, but when he came back, the changes he noticed in life. And there's some really good stories in here. And then Ageless Winona, of course.
Ageless Winona, I've seen that one everywhere.
That's been the bestseller. And people like that cover because...
It's ice fishing. Everyone knows that.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And I'm sure there's been some people who have looked at that, well, is that my grandfather or is that...
Yeah, sure.
Is that kind of because... You know,
it's quite possible it was.
It's possible it was. People like that. People like that being outside.
Was that your first one that you did then, Ageless Winona?
No, Portraits is my first.
Portraits was your first, and then Ageless Winona is your best-selling one so far.
Yeah, so far. That's sold quite a bit.
Can I see that one? I know I've seen this one around town everywhere, too.
Yeah.
So this one is, what is this one about then?
Yeah, it's about a guy who kind of walks around town, talks to dead people.
All right.
There's a lot of dead people that have passed away at Winona, you know?
I suppose, yeah.
But you know, it's not only that, but it gives you a sense of Winona and its history.
Yeah,
and it tells you a little bit. I like to write about people who had life fall on their heads.
Sure.
That's
what do you mean by life fall on their heads?
Early deaths, a kid die, and you know,
sure.
You know, things that didn't work like they planned. You know, not that life is. I mean, you St. Martin's guys are special. I'll give you that. But most of us 18-year-olds. Had no idea we were going to, I had never entered my mind I'd be sitting here talking to you when I was 18 years old about dead people and schizophrenia and all that. I mean.
Well, this platform has opened up a lot of things for people just to come on and talk and tell their story about past things. I love it.
It's so great, Chris. People want history. It's part of who we are.
Yeah.
And that other stuff ain't. It's this. It's who we are.
Yep.
It's part of our myth. It's part of our thinking.
So when you're writing then, how did you get into it? Did you just say, man, I got things that are in here and I just want to put them out there?
I always wanted to be a writer. Even a little kid, I wrote. Mm-hmm. I read a lot. I was a reader. But I could never get the words out. I couldn't get them out through my fingertips. You know?
Sure.
And I just couldn't get them out. And I didn't really start writing until my dad died. When dad died, there was like a lifted.
Yeah.
Because I don't know why, but dad and I, we didn't fight, but we sure didn't get along. You know?
Yeah.
We'd walk in the room, I could feel my hair. And I love my dad, but I could feel the hair sticking up on the back of my neck.
Yeah.
We were Hansons, you know? And we would take opposite sides of the way. I mean, the poor guy liked the Vikings, and I was a Packer fan.
Oh, geez. You know there's I mean? A real big divide.
And, you know, we see baseball players. He'd like some baseball players, and I didn't like him at all. So, now he's gone. I got to tell you, we get along much better.
I bet you do. It's a one-sided fight.
I get out to that cemetery, and him and I will sit down, and I'll bring out something to drink and smoke or whatever, and we'll be just kind of letting go.
You know? I
kind of wish that had happened earlier, but it just wasn't in the cards. It just wasn't in the cards. And then so after he passed, I started writing, and I sent some letters to the editor. I wrote one time, letter to the editor, and I took the perspective of sitting in the confessional booth.
Oh, really?
To a confession. And, you know, hasn't showed up. I don't know whatever happened to that. It was in the Winona Daily News. And they stopped printing my stuff, as did the Winona Post.
Oh. Well, now you're on here telling it.
And so I wrote this story about a confession. I mean, I never did it. I can't imagine they're too complicated and mostly the same, right?
Yeah.
And about a week later, there was a response in the Winona Daily News.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. And she was, I don't remember her name, and I'm sorry if I offended you.
whoever you are.
But she just ripped the Diocese of Winona for writing about or for revealing.
Oh, so they thought someone from there wrote it.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I guess they probably did.
Yeah.
I don't mean any harm. I don't have any bad intent. I'm just a simple townie who has a gift for writing. I try and write. I mean, I write every day. I write. I never know when I don't write. I pack.
Okay, you pack. Hunt and peck.
I don't know where I'm going when I start. I don't do an outline like they taught us in school. I just start talking. And I just start talking. And I'll write through it. And I'm getting better now. It used to take me the longest time. I'd have to write 4, 5, 6 revisions. And I'd be drained. And now I can write it. It'll take me just a couple times, twist a couple words, and once I get it out, then I can stretch it a little bit, and you kind of weave it, and pull it apart, and you open it up, and it's a really good feeling to finish a book. It's a really good feeling to finish a story.
Sure.
And it's a really good feeling to have people read your story, and hear your story, and be interested in your story, and try and capture some of that Winona myth we all got, all us Winona guys, gals, got running through us.
When you say you write every day, how do you know when you're going to start doing a book? You're like, oh, now I'm going to start, or all of a sudden you're just writing, you go, hey, this could be a good book.
Well, I start writing a story. And I don't really have a plot. And the next thing I know is I write another story. And then I write another story. And all of a sudden I got 30, 40, 50 stories. And then I got to try to weave them together. And then I go back and I'll read them. And then I'll add on. And then I got a really good editor and publisher, Terry Karsten.
And are they from town?
Terry owns Wagon Bridge Publishing.
She's from town. Saw that on the back.
Yeah.
Okay.
And she kind of... She puts them together, because I just write. You know, I don't know where I'm going.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, you know, and she kind of weaves them into the story so that they're coherent and divides the chapters up and puts them in order.
Okay. And so everything that you do is pretty much locally sourced here. The artist, the publishing, you.
Well, yeah.
Pretty much.
THC soda I can get here. You know, I got to go out of state for that other stuff.
Yeah.
But other than that, yeah.
The writing fuel, we'll call that. The writing fuel.
The writing fuel. Yeah. You know, it this stuff chills my bones. The other stuff triggers my mind, my memories. And, I don't really drive when I'm, I don't drive when I'm buzzed up. Yeah. Science girl drive me around town.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea.
Because, you know, you really slow down. And, I remember, I was never so scared in my life. It was 77, and I was up at St. Mary's, and had too much weed in the back of my car. Uh-huh. I bring it into town. And I was, the worst thing was I was stoned. I shouldn't have been driving. But, you know, when you're 18 years old, you do a lot of dumb things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, dumb things. So I'm driving down the highway, and all of a sudden I noticed I was going about 25 miles an hour. And I was still, you know, aware of what that isn't cool. Next thing I know, I come down Huff Street there, and I take a right where Quick Trip is now.
Yep.
And I notice a cop tailing me. Your heart. I mean, your heart starts beating. So I'm going, what am I going to do? I was toast, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So then I drive down there and go by Lowry Field, and then I take a left on Main. I see the cathedral. The cop's tailing me. He's just waiting for me. I'm a good driver when I'm stoned, but I'm really slow. I stay on my side of the road, and I don't do that no more. But I go into, I see the cathedral. I roll up my 69 Volkswagen Bug, because that's what I drove.
Sure.
I roll it right up into the front of the cathedral, the Sacred Heart, and I go trucking up those steps. I was going to church, and the cop car just walked through and drove right by me. So, Mr. Policeman, I thank you for giving me a chance.
Yeah.
You know, and when I, you know, if there's one job I couldn't do, there's a lot of jobs I can't do, fix anything or do anything like that. I'm just a real klutz, but I could not be a police officer. Not in a million years.
Sure.
Because I'd probably be dead, or I just can't do it. Just like,
yep.
I can't officiate a basketball game because I'm helping kids up or stuff like that.
Sure, yeah.
You know, I mean, I was a coach for a long time. I coached all those Caledonia high school teams that won the state tournament. I've coached a couple pro football players. The Caledonia girls basketball team.
Okay.
In fact, that was the first time I met you. You don't remember it. Your dad brought you down there to St. Mary's grade school gym for a free throw shooting contest.
Oh, yeah. I used to do that all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Man, I saw Rich. I hadn't seen your dad in a long time. And he's a good dude. I really liked your Uncle Bob, too, because Goodview Baseball, you played seventh grade. You were 7 years old. You played with 12 years old. So you learned the game of baseball. They put you out in right field when you were 7 years old, right?
Yeah, sure.
And then as you grew older, you would move around the field. And I always liked to pitch. I was a pitcher. And Bob was a catcher. And Bob kind of took me under his wing.
Yeah.
He was a good catcher. I mean, he was a smart man. And, you remember stuff. You remember stuff like Mrs. Shabilsky. And I remember I come back to Goodview for a tournament one time. And my kids were all young. Yeah, and there was Mrs. Shabilsky. She was sitting in her lawn chair and watching the game. I almost start crying. Tears. I introduced her to my kids. Tears start coming. I mean, there are people in your life who really make a difference.
That's right. Yeah.
You know. I mean, and they all don't wear suits. They all don't wear ties.
No.
But they're regular folk.
Yeah. People usually that teach you are the ones that make the biggest impact on you.
Oh, teachers.
Yep.
I want to thank you for teaching because.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, teachers make all, teachers are, I look back now, and I was just talking to the president of Winona State yesterday, mm-hmm. day before, we were texting back and forth, and I said, I'm still thankful for those old school marms, because we went to Phelps, which was on the Winona State campus, and those teachers, I'm 66 years old, that's 55 years ago.
Sure.
60 years ago, are still with me today. You know, they're still with me today.
Yep.
And I walk out of St. Mary, I go walking through St. Mary's College. I guess it's a university now, but habits change, are hard to change. And I go through there, and I had a rough time out there because that's when the schizophrenia set in.
Okay.
And I still remember those brothers asking me questions and this and that and the other thing. Part of my foreman. Teachers are part of who we become.
Right, yep.
And it's a really, really important thing, Really important thing.
So when you're writing a book, how long does it take from start to finish on these for you? Are you like months, years? I mean, I don't even know what it takes.
I'm getting faster.
Okay.
I always say portraits took me 50 years to write.
Sure.
Because, you know, that's the first one. This one I put out in a little over a year, somewhere like that. I started writing about a topic.
Okay.
This was here probably a year and a half. And then Across the Great Divide is about a year.
Okay.
So in Lenaville, the one I'm working on now and is halfway done, I'm trying to get, you know, I want to get up to about 250 pages, so I'm thinking another 6 months I'll have that one ready.
Okay.
So
it takes maybe about a year-ish now for you?
Yeah, it seems to take about a year.
Okay.
You know, and so far, you know, I'm really lucky, Chris. Winona hasn't run out of stories to tell.
No, I know.
You know, it's really a remarkable town.
Yeah.
It's got a long history and a lot of interesting history, a lot of interesting people. And most people say, well, you're going to read a history book. Well, this happened in 1858. And the next thing you know, you're nodding off.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to attach stories to history.
Yep.
And that's, you know, many of the people I mentioned in history were once here. They were here. And I'm thinking, you know, I mean, they talk to me, but I'm thinking they kind of like being remembered.
Yeah, well, who wouldn't want their legacy to be remembered, you know?
Yeah.
At least for one thing.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, that's kind of what I do. And, you know, I share it. I share my stories on Facebook. And a lot of people read those. They get edited when they put them in a book.
Mm-hmm.
They get put in order when I put them in a book.
So everything's out of order when you're kind of doing it.
John Hyatt, when he was playing with the Homers, the Goners,
okay,
had a song about shit flying in every direction. Guess what? That's what this writer does.
Sure.
Maybe not all writers do.
Okay.
But, you know, I get up in the morning, I read a little bit, and then I start writing.
Okay.
And that's my gig.
Sure.
And
so if someone wants to buy these, you can find them in Winona, or you can go on Amazon?
You can go on Amazon.
Okay.
I think we got them priced at $15.50 on Amazon.
Okay, so that's not bad at all.
Not bad at all. And we decided we were going to start, I decided that there's some corporate greed going through the system right now,
mm-hmm.
you know, for whatever reason. So I decided I was going to fight that. And my other books are more expensive, but this one I said, you know what? I make enough money on it at 15 or whatever, and I'm okay with that. And so Amazon will cut me a check. I don't have to do inventory.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If I sell them in the store, I got to carry inventory. And that inventory, ask any business person, is expensive to carry.
Sure.
And so they're retailers throughout town. And I'm just, sometimes I wish I had a distribution arm. I don't, I'm just a little guy. And, I mean, I could submit these books to big-time publishing houses, but I don't like their vibe. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I'm a regular guy. I don't, you know, and Terry and I have such a good relationship.
Yep.
That I, you know, how's a New York City boy understand what's going on in Winona, Minnesota?
Yeah.
You know, how to, you know, they'll be cutting this and cutting that, and who is this and who is that? And
mm-hmm. You don't know how to end up.
You don't, and so I'm, you know, I'm comfortable in my spot. I love Winona. And I think right now what we got going on in downtown Winona is some of the coolest stuff.
I know they're really starting to do things around downtown now. They're trying to gear it towards more of us local people that are around here. Like, I love going to the brewery. I like going to Peter's Beer Garden. But now there's restaurants popping up all over the place.
Oh, good restaurants, too. I mean, it's an exciting time to be in Winona. Because when I was your age or younger, you know, Winona was dead downtown.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was college students in dark stores.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's empty storefronts everywhere. It ain't what,
right.
Actually,
right.
Winona's probably better than most downtowns
because
we have people in them. But it's really, I think it's really, really important to to support
yeah.
local business, local people.
Do you have one story in Winona of Winona that is just your absolute favorite or something very funny about it? Get a good one?
Well, I think I tell this story at Peter's Beer Garden, and it involves Lena Weinberg.
Mm-hmm.
And talks about the early days of the Huff Hotel in Winona. And the partner, I'll shorten it up, but the partner of Colonel Cockrell was E.D. Williams. And came from Cincinnati. And Colonel Cockrell he liked to sit around the bar and drink bourbons at the end of the bar. That's how he ran the business.
Sure.
But Williams had his nose in a lot of stuff. Liveries and the first gas company that came into place. He was also, he liked taking advantage of women.
Okay.
There are people out there like that. You know what I mean? It was good times.
Yep.
And the ladies who worked for Lena didn't like him at all. And one time, I think it was 1872. Me and dates are really, really... 1872, Williams made a play for Lena. Got her in the back room. And, you know. Well, Lena, she was a fighter, man. She spat tacks. This was a short, tough German lady. She couldn't hardly speak English. And the boys at the Huff Hotel bar still swear to the day. But Lena wound up, he was moving in on her, wound up and grabbed McWilliams in the nose. She didn't let go right away. She squeezed. And they say, you could still hear the echoes of Williams screaming in the old Huff Hotel. And so we were down there. We were in the Kensington, mm-hmm. Joe and I, not too long ago. And I was listed. I didn't hear it because that basement. Some of that maybe I don't know. But I was listed to see if I could hear the echoes of Williams screaming. Now only a schizophrenic, right?
Sure.
Could still be hearing stuff from 150 years ago. But you know, it's interesting to think about. So that story, as I've told that a couple times at Peter's Beer Garden, mm-hmm. Public Library. We do public library stuff too.
Okay.
And and people seem to enjoy that. There used to be a bar in Winona called the Mississippi House.
Okay.
It's kind of behind the movie theater on the other side of the tracks.
Sure.
There was a town down there at one time, and it would get flooded every spring. But the Mississippi House was just one step above the Hobo Jungle, which was down there towards Maltrop and Fibrite and down there.
Okay.
Down there. The Minnesota Art Museum was all part of the Hobo Jungle.
The Hobo Jungle.
Yeah. We had a Hobo Jungle because we had all these railroad lines coming in.
Sure.
It was in the 1800s and stuff like that. And so people had to get around, you know, they had to transport and they'd hop on board and they always knew they could come to Winona. And you talk to different people. I was talking to Bob Kierlin. He said, I hadn't thought about that for years, but he remembers now these bums coming up, and he grew up on 175 East 4th.
Okay.
And he remembers these bums coming, knocking on the back door and asking for a butter sandwich or a lard sandwich.
Sure.
And I'll get back to Charlie. Beam came here in 1876 looking for work. He took a job bartending at the Mississippi House. True story. He fell in love with the owner's daughter. But Charlie started drinking too much. Sometimes you can drink too much.
There's times, yeah.
And people knew Charlie was going, something was wrong with this guy when he grabbed a guy one night who was in a bar asking for a drink, and he bit his ear off. Seriously, right in the Winona paper, bit his ear off.
And it wasn't Mike Tyson, was it?
Well, it might have been a cousin.
Okay.
And I mean, it was in the Winona paper all over the place, and the cops were down at the Mississippi House on a regular basis. Well, Charlie really started to kind of lose it, and he'd gotten himself a gun. His wife Anna had filed divorce papers, and that just didn't happen in the 1880s. Charlie wasn't happy. Started stalking her. One night, they were at the Philharmonic Hall, which is where the Eagles Club was.
Okay.
Huge building. That's where Frederick Douglass in 1872 spoke. 4,000 Winonans came down to listen to him.
That's cool.
Yeah. And they had a big party down there. Winona, especially in the winter, we got to have places where we can socialize.
That's right.
We'll go stir crazy.
I agree with that.
So Charlie started following her around, and he followed her down to that. They were going through the divorce proceedings. He followed her down to the Philharmonic Hall. And didn't take his eyes off her, making her uncomfortable. And she talked about that in the newspaper. So they got done, and they left. They turned left onto Franklin Street, and they turned left. And they're going down 3rd Street. And right there by said Irish pub downtown.
McCune's? Well, it used to be. There's Lucky's.
No, this further towards Franklin.
Oh, Mulligan's?
Mulligan's.
There you go.
Mulligan's. And it used to be called the Gasthaus. I mean, the Burmeisters owned it.
Okay.
It was a restaurant, and they also owned Ed's No Name Bar, mm-hmm. which used to be the Burmeister Hotel.
Okay.
There's still Burmeisters in town. Right there in front of Mick.
Mulligan's?
Mulligan's.
Yeah.
Told you, I got a hard time with names.
Yeah.
Right there in front of Mulligan's, he pulls out his gun, shoots, scrapes her off the top of the head, right?
Jeez.
She's bleeding like a pig. They go inside the building, they tape her up. 5 minutes later, he had turned back around, went up Franklin, went up a half a block, pulled in right behind where the Eagles Club is now, used to be the Philharmonic Hall.
Popped himself, yeah.
Died with $1.31 in his pocket.
Ooh.
They wanted to know what to, where to bury him, how to do with him, sent a letter to his folks. They said, responded back, "We don't know what's wrong, we had gone wrong with Charlie. We won't be attending the funeral."
Oh, wow.
So somewhere out there in Pauper's unmarked graves is Charlie Beam.
Okay.
And, some of that has been put into the next book.
Okay.
Where did he get the gun, and did he work for Lena? And so there's all sorts of suspense. There's a Stovall that just disappeared after a fire. And
this is coming up in the new book.
It's all coming up in the new book. Joe and I are going to do in February, if I ever get my act together. Joe's ready. It's me. And we're a team with a musician, and we're going to perform down at the Parlor.
Oh, that'd be cool.
And we're going to call it Scoundrels of Winona.
Scoundrels of Winona.
Yeah, and we're going to tell stories about some of the early scoundrels of Winona.
Sure.
With a little accompaniment in the back. So people have really shown up at the library. They show up at Peter's Beer Garden. They used to show up at the athletic club when we were there, but the acoustics there are really hard because there's a lot of activity going on.
Yeah.
So Winona's been really receptive to storytelling, and we hope to continue to do it because just what we do.
Yeah, it's fun for you.
Yeah.
Well, so as we're winding down here, you're working on the two new ones. What's the one that we were just talking about going to be called?
Well, right now, I'm focused on calling it Lenaville.
Lenaville.
Because the townies called this Lenaville.
Okay.
And the most people call it Winona, but the real low grades like me, dirt balls, you know.
Sure.
We called it Lenaville. We thought she ruled the. We thought she ruled the town.
Yeah.
And that, and then we're gonna do. I'm starting to work on a play with Ken McCullough, and we're in the really really early stages. Lynn Nankinville.
What's it gonna be called?
Well,
we don't know yet.
We don't know. We haven't titled that.
Okay.
We have to put some nice, you know, funky name on it.
But yep.
I think it's gonna be about the characters who we've chosen to live in the Morgan Block. And, you know, the second floor balconies and
sure.
and old clotheslines in the back and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And then, well, you know, after, I mean, there, when I write, there's, we may do one later on with Lucille. Lucille's one of my favorite characters.
Okay.
And she has a seat at the high and low, second from the end. Her dead husband, her dead boyfriend sits next to her, called Tommy Lee.
Okay.
And so she just chewed me out one day. I was just a younger person. And I went over and talked to her. She said, "What are you staring at me for? Tommy Lee, are you hitting on me? Tommy Lee is my man." And, you know, they look over at the stool next to her. There ain't nobody there. You know? But you write and you put people in these situations and they just come out. So
then you got to make them come to life.
Got to make them come to life.
Yeah. And then this is your newest one. You just gifted me, Across the Great Divide.
Yep.
And you can find that any local store roughly around town.
I put them in. If anybody wants to carry it, I'm cool with that. You know, I do. You know, it's really sharing Winona's history.
Yeah.
And that's the most important thing. I think people should read it. I think they'll enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll make them think. If you read one of my books and you haven't had a thought, you're brain dead.
Okay, because I'm gonna read this now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
And it's my story. You can always text me or whatever, you know, if you got questions about a character or something, or think you know somebody, maybe that is.
Sure.
Sometimes I don't like saying anything bad about people.
Mm-hmm.
So if stuff happened that wasn't so kosher, I'm not. I'll change the names.
Okay.
You know, I think Winona's heritage should be something you hold proud.
Well, you know, the thing is, though, we watch movies and they're never based in your town that you're in. I mean, they're usually Los Angeles or New York or something. So you could read this book and still enjoy it from Winona's aspect, even if you've never visited here.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I think it's good advertising for Winona.
Mm-hmm, that too.
I mean,
the Miami of Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, people, I've had some of my readers come visit, and I've gotten together with them.
Really?
Yeah.
It's really cool.
People coming to Winona to see who these people are.
See what Merle's talking about.
Yeah. And so, you know, you just, every house has a story attached to it.
Sure.
Every person has a story attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Winona could do it up really good. With GPS and stuff like that, we could be clicking at a house and we could hear the history of that house.
Yeah.
Who the people were. And, you know, we spent a lot of time looking at our phones.
Yeah, we do.
It's modern technology, right? It's the way. Well, when they're walking downtown, how nice would it be if they clicked at a building and they could say, this was this, this was this, this was this.
Yeah.
It was owned by this. Because even in those rundown buildings down there, they were once home to somebody's dreams.
Sure.
And oftentimes the owners would live upstairs. And so we can't forget those people.
That's right.
You know, they're regular folks. And you know, they all got stones.
Yep.
They got stones out there in the necropolis. So, you know, Winona has some great cemeteries too.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. And so, I love the cemetery walk. We love going to Woodlawn. It's really cool. There's so much history there, like you were just saying to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
And we're fortunate that the really wealthy people in town used to put their stories in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
So we would know. you know. And they'd have their society pages in the old Winona papers that, well, they traveled around the world, the Hortons did, or the Nortons did, or the Lairds did, or the Stovalls did, or, well, the Stovalls didn't. They were two black businessmen in Winona.
Sure.
And they owned six buildings down here.
Wow.
And one of them disappeared after a fire. The Billings Tavern, which is out on 5th and Ewing by Evie's Corner.
Okay.
There was a complex out there. It was owned by Verrazano Simpson.
Okay.
Verrazano was one of the scoundrels of Winona history. Okay. He was partners with John Ludwig and the Ludwig Bank and set up railroad boards. He developed a block that's getting torn down now between the library and the courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all fenced off. I assume that it's getting plowed under. That was one of the first developments in Winona, and Verrazano Simpson was the man behind it.
Okay.
William Wyndham lived out of the corner. House is gone now. William Wyndham was Secretary of Treasury, presidential candidate who got votes at the presidential convention, 18 whatever, I don't know. He lived in the Christensen House, or the foundation of the Christensen House.
Okay.
But these guys, I mean, you're talking some of the most powerful, wealthy people in Winona.
Yeah.
Then you had that dirtbag, Henry Huff. People didn't like him. Henry ripped too many people off. People used to say that, thought that Henry Huff would be thrown in the Mississippi River for the catfish to feed on. And he left Winona pretty early. And then he went down to Chicago. Was living in Chicago, lost everything in the Chicago fire. So when he came back up here, and he was a big Mason, established the bylaws for the Mason, nobody knew him. Nobody knew that little prick. And I say that because he had that, going through the History Center, they used to have an exhibit which showed his handwriting.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Delicate and just...
Very fine.
Very fine. Yeah. Not any rough-hewn Winona that I know. You know, I mean, we're a special bunch.
Yeah.
And
I got a question for you, and this is one of my last questions I have, is if someone were to research Winona, who do you think would be a famous name that would stand out for someone from all the characters that have been around here in past, present? Who is someone that someone would know if they just researched Winona?
Well, who somebody would know if...
If someone wasn't from here.
Wasn't from here and wanted to get a real grip on the, the fabric of Winona?
Yeah.
Oh, Chinky Dearman.
Chinky Dearman.
Everybody, my age and older, has a Chinky story. And Stanley had a hard time in life. He got in some trouble. But, you know, he was short and burly and had hair all over his body. He liked to watch fires. He set more than a few of them.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, if you ask Jerry Miller, right, his dad and grandfather, William was his dad, and then his grandfather was... I get those Miller families confused. It might have been Joseph. But they used to burn cars Sunday mornings and under the bridge when they were down there. They'd, you know, so the cushions and stuff would go, and then they'd scrap the metal. One of Jerry's jobs was to go make sure there were no bums sleeping in the cars.
Of course.
But guys like Stanley and stuff who liked fires. And Winona's had a lot of large fires. And Stanley and who knows how many other people would watch these cars burn, and they'd get their fix off of that. And I think if you study fires and people who set fires, habitual fire setters, they get a little like an adrenaline rush.
Yeah,
out of it. You know, they get a little fix out of it.
I've heard of that before.
Yeah, and so. Stanley got some newspaper coverage, but if you walk around the bars and you talk to some of the old guys, they can tell you about Stanley Dearman.
Okay.
And the East End, the East End of Winona is full of, we've kind of become detached to the early Kashubian history, and they had some real characters, real, some of the people, you know, like West End too, but alcohol and poverty and continued stuff. But it, I mean, you know, some people are good people until they start drinking.
Sure, sure.
You know, and then it just changes, it kind of changes everything. Yep. So, you know, but that's a good place to start. The Laird Norton, the one of the true tragedies of Winona is the Norton family.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they lost two kids in a short period of time. The one grandson of the Norton family ended up running Weyerhaeuser.
Okay.
They partnered with Weyerhaeuser after they kind of shut down operations here. But I'm bad with names. The oldest son died of meningitis at Harvard, and the Winona newspaper followed the family out to, he was going to school at Harvard. The second son, Matthew Jr., took his own life and died of the soft heart disease 6 months later. And the youngest daughter, Beulah, just went in the tank. And, I mean, you're talking serious money, right?
Yeah.
So she was still being courted. And one of Matthew Norton Jr.'s classmates came out, and he was son of a gin or a cotton mill that was used to be done in Boston and Northeast, and was moving operations south, cheaper, you know. And he was building it, and him and Beulah were going to get married, and Beulah was feeling a little spark, and they were setting up an electrical generator at the time, and down it came, killed him, fell right on top of his head. Killed him, and then Beulah went in the tank. So I'll write about Beulah Norton walking around town, black dress flying, and black, you know, the whole nine yards. And the entire Norton family moved out to Pasadena along the ocean there. They called it Millionaire's Row, because a million back then is like a billion now.
Sure.
You know, and Beulah had a little cabin out there, but they kept that house, which is where the old Y was.
Oh, yep.
Was the Norton Mansion.
It was mansion.
And they tried giving that mansion away to the city. They tried to say, well, we'll put up a park. They wanted a park. And the Y had burned down. Fire's been a real big part, big issue. The Y had burned down on the old Hardee's block.
Yep.
Where the apartments are now in the 40s, I think.
Yeah.
40s. Yep. And so... they finally, the Y, secured that, and I wish I had gone to that auction or whatever to get some relics from that house.
Yep.
But it was said that after the two boys died, that the housekeeper was never to open the doors to their bedrooms. And, the Nortons and the Lairds and the Nortons are still around. Their presence in Winona isn't that strong anymore, but they own banks in Chicago, and that fortune has continued on.
Yep.
They support about 300 families still. Their foundation.
Wow. That's awesome.
It's some smart planning. And,
sure.
And you know, the Congress when they spoke, the Laird Norton spoke. Wyndham and Congress. We had the Secretary of State who lived in, or not Secretary of State, Speaker of the House, essentially from back then, was from Winona.
Okay.
And I think Jim Reimlinger owns that house now. It's a two-story gray house on Broadway.
Okay, he probably does.
Yeah. I mean, it's those kind of stories, and that those people that used to walk through this town, and, you know, you talk to people even in the 60s, 50s and 60s, you see Rolls Royces rolling through Winona.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this town had it all. It was like a city that was a small town.
Yep.
And people liked coming here because they felt safe and they could talk. People would talk. People would communicate. Townies would talk to really wealthy people. Winona was built on that. you know, Winona was built on that. And there wasn't, it just, I kind of wish we could go back to that.
Yeah.
I kind of wish we could go back to, you know, me and you talking.
Yep.
I mean, that's where it's at.
That's right. I like doing that too. I like going places and talking to people. I'd rather be face to face with someone than across on a phone call or something like that. It's so much better.
I don't do phone in very well. I can text.
Okay.
Because I can write.
Right. Know? Yeah. Hunt and peck.
Hunt and peck. Yep. And I can talk because, you know, that's, I was brought up in a family.
Yep.
I like to talk. And we've kind of, we're missing that there's been a generational, we've lost that connectivity.
Yeah, well, nowadays you can just text someone or call someone real quickly if necessary. Before, you'd have to meet up with them and talk to them.
Yeah.
I like being face-to-face with people, too. So that's my preference if I have to have one.
Yeah.
So is there more you'd like to add to the podcast? Otherwise, we've been rolling for about an hour and 20.
No. If you ever want me back.
Oh, people love coming back for part twos.
Yeah, and yes. I mean, you can grow quite, and I can assimilate what we talk about here today.
Yeah.
I can ask some more stories because this is your town. This is my town. This is your day. I mean, everybody we know, or a lot of the people we know, it's our town.
That's right.
And when new people come in, they should know about this town.
They should.
You realtors should all buy this book.
Yes.
You should all buy this book.
Well, I have one now.
Yeah. You all buy that book, and when you sell a house, you should.
That way I'll know the history when I sell someone their house. Yeah. That'd be a good idea.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. I want to thank you for coming in, Merle. This has been great. And you have 4 published books out there that you can find on Amazon anywhere. So if anybody's listening or watching, look it up on Amazon if you're not from town. Otherwise, you can go around to certain stores in town and find it. But Merle Hansen's got Ageless Winona, the new one, that's Across the Great Divide. That's the one I was gifted that I get to read now and check it out and see some of these stories come to life through the pages. So, again, I want to thank you for coming on in. And for those who are listening out there, you can find this on any major streaming platform. If you want to watch us, it's YouTube. You can see the books, the covers, what they look like. Or if you're listening, Spotify, Apple Podcast, Pandora, any of the major ones, I am out there. But, again, this has been another episode of Brews and Cruise. I want to thank Merle one more time for coming on in and having some THC sodas with me.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. Cheers.
Been a great time.